What's up, y'all? I am back with another podcast with my inconsistent ass. But here we are. I'm driving, so hopefully this sounds okay. Hopefully it's not too much road noise. Hopefully I'm not muffled. But I'm here. I am on my way back from Florida. I just spent the last 2 weeks in Florida getting my CDL. So I am now a Class A commercial driver's license holder. Yes. I'm going to try and put some clapping noises in there. But look, so why did I go to Florida? Let's get that out of the way first. I went to Florida because I went through this program called Truth Into Transportation. Indeed, sponsored a scholarship. They apparently do it every year, and they select up to 5 vets or individuals who are coming out of, transitioning out of the service to attend this CDL school. The name of the school is called the CDL school. The scholarship is called Troops into Transportation. That's the name of the scholarship, and the school is the CDL school. So anyway, I got a full scholarship. And if you're wondering why did I go with a company to get my CDL or why didn't I go somewhere local, well, right now, because the law behind getting your CDL has changed, it changed at the beginning of this year in February. Right now, a lot of CDL schools are charging a lot of money to get your CDL. And also, the companies, when you go with them, you know, if you go with the company to get your CDL, you commit to driving with them for a certain amount of time. And if you don't drive with them that certain amount of time, then you end up on the money. So this is definitely a gem that I lucked up on finding. And if you know anybody who's interested in getting their CDL and they are prior military or they're in the military, tell them to look into this scholarship. It's by Indeed, like the job board, Indeed, I-N-D-E-E-D. Yeah. It's by Indeed, and it's called Troops Into Transportation. When I tell you, they took care of everything. My online, so I did the first 2 weeks of my CDL, the classroom portion, I did that online. And that was, we did that, I think it was like 4 or 5 hours per day for the first 2 weeks. That's when I did the classroom portion. And mainly that portion is, you know, to teach you, you know, the book stuff and also to prepare you to get your actual CDL permit. I actually got my CDL permit before I started the class. So when I went into the class, I was already, you know, a step ahead. Me and a few other people did, too. But that's something that I wanted to have ahead of time because I don't like, I'm just going to be straight up, I don't like school shit. I don't. That's why, that's one of the reasons why I ended up getting my CDL, because I feel that I'm probably not going to get a college degree. I've tried college over and over, and it's just not for me. And I know people laugh at that when somebody says that it's not for them, but at this point in my life, it's not for me, and I'm getting to an age where I do need to make a high income. And like I said, I don't like school, so I had to find something that I do enjoy, which I do enjoy driving, and it will, you know, enable me to make a high income to do the things that I want to do as a 30-plus-year-old man. But anyways, back to what I was saying, I don't like school stuff, so I wanted to get that out of the way ahead of time so that I'm not stressed, you know, when it came to crunch time, you know, with getting my permit. I had that out of the way, and plus I was leaving my job, so I had to make sure I had everything in order so that everything could flow as I needed it to. So, you know, I did that classroom portion online, then, you know, 2 weeks went by before I could get to Florida to do my training. But, you know, the school, they sponsored everything. My transportation, even though I drove myself, I did have the option to fly, but, you know, they offered me $400 to drive. So I drive a Honda Accord. $400 to drive, my car didn't take even half of that. Well, maybe half of it, but still. You know, so I came out on top in that area. So I drove down. They put me in a nice hotel. My hotel, it was double occupancy, so I did have a roommate. He was actually, he's an Air Force vet. But he was cool. The whole program, you know, I have nothing bad to say about it. You know, my training itself, it was, so my first day I was very flustered. It was straight trial by fire. They threw us right out there. They put us in the truck right away. After we got our briefing, you know, they gave us our paperwork to study our pre-trip. And pre-trip is just, it's a portion of testing out for your CDL. You know, you have to name certain parts of the truck, identify, you know, that they're in proper condition. You know, for example, you look at your radiator. Here's my radiator. It's properly mounted, not cracked, bent, broken, no leaks, no wires showing. No leaks. Yeah, I think I said that. But anyway, that's, for example, you know, part of your pre-trip. So you have to learn different parts of the truck. You know, so it goes from, it's three, hold on. I'll tell you in a minute how many parts it is. But, you know, you have the front of the truck from, you know, from the very stand at the very front of the truck, then you have, no, sorry, stand at the very front of the truck and under the hood, you have that part, which is, you know, part A of your pre-trip. Then you have part B of your pre-trip, which is like at the fender, you know, right by the door, back to the end of the cab, back to the end of the tractor. Then you have, that's part B. Then you have C, which is the trailer itself. So you have to do, you know, either A, B, or C. Some schools may have you test out on all of them. I actually had to test out on A, then I had to explain the coupling process. That is where your trailer hooks to your tractor and, you know, you put your air hoses and your emergency airline and electric line or whatever into the trailer. And you basically explain that part, and, you know, your fifth wheel. I know a lot of this, you know, just sounds foreign to a lot of people, so I'm going to move on. And also, I had to do inside the cab. You know, inside the cab, you just name the things that you need to look for just to make sure that your cab is serviced. That everything is serviceable. Everything is running as it should be, you know, operating as it should be. Then also, you do your brake test. It was very overwhelming. I'm not even going to lie to you. It was very overwhelming. Looking back now, I say that it was definitely a trust the process situation. Because, like I said, that first day, I was flustered as fuck. I went back to my hotel after that first day, and I just didn't know if it was for me. Like, I didn't know if I was going to come out of here with a CDL. The whole backing the truck, you know, trying to back a truck and trailer in a straight line, it is not easy if you've never done it before. You know, so it just took me to, you know, my patience. You know, I just had to be patient with it because I was flustered because I'm like, you know, why am I not getting this? Because I'm used to, you know, physical things. I'm good with my hands, you know. So physical things, I'm usually able to catch on pretty fast. So with this, I'm like, why am I not getting it? So I was frustrated, but it was only the first day. And then when we got into the truck and, you know, actually driving the truck on the first day, you know, I couldn't get them gears. Like, this is a 10-speed manual transmission. And I can't even drive a car that's a manual. You know, I can get it in park. I mean, so I can get it out in first gear and I can get it in reverse. But other than that, I can't drive a car that's a manual transmission. I might be able to now if I can remember the gear pattern. But this truck, you know, it's a 10-speed manual transmission. The gear pattern is definitely different than a car's gear pattern. So, you know, trying to learn that, and then also you have to double clutch with these trucks. So trying to do all of that, like, the first day, I wasn't getting it. I was not getting it. The second day, I was listed as remedial. So that was kind of embarrassing. So, you know, the second day was a little bit better. The third day was better. You know, as time went on, it was better. I actually was told that I could test out on an automatic truck. And, you know, I was cool with that. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll test out on the automatic because from what my understanding is a lot of the big companies there, they have automatic trucks now. So, you know, me having a manual restriction, it wasn't a big deal to me. But even after they told me that, they still kept training me on the manual. So came test day, which was today, I tested out today. I tested out on a manual because I felt comfortable because, you know, they told me on Wednesday, I think it was, that I could test on an automatic. But at that point, I already felt comfortable with the manual. I felt like I could do enough to pass it. You know, like, I ain't no expert. I'm not, you know, that proficient. But I knew that I could do enough to pass. So that was Wednesday. But, you know, they kept training me. You know, even after they told me that on Wednesday, I still went out training on the manual. Trained on the manual Thursday and Friday. So when it came today, I'm like, I feel comfortable driving the manual. So I tested with the manual today, and I passed. I think I did really well for someone who couldn't drive that truck less than 2 weeks ago. I think I did great. I think I did really good. I got my CDL now. So round of applause for me. But anyways, why did I decide to get my CDL? Well, just a little while ago, I did say that, you know, I'm not going to say that I won't, because as I've grown, you know, in the last few years, I've learned not to say never or to say anything is definite, because I surprise myself with a lot of things that I do, and I've learned that nothing is really definite these days, as far as I'm concerned, as far as my life is concerned. You know, as long as I got air in my lungs, as long as I can get up, open these eyes, walk, if I decide to change my mind about something, I'm going to change my mind. Especially if I feel like it's beneficial to me, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go after it. But at this place in my life, I don't feel like I'm going to get a degree, a college degree. And I'm not saying that you need a college degree to make a high income, but you need something. You need a degree or you need a trade. And this, having a CDL, it's a trade. You know, I'm a professional driver at this point. You know, I might not be professional as far as, you know, somebody's opinion, but as far as the book says, I'm a professional driver at this point. So this is mine. This is my degree. This is my ticket to go after a high income. You know, right now, even since I started school and I've gotten my permit, my school submitted, had to fill out what was called a universal application. So I've had so many, and this is with me just having a permit, with me not even finishing school. I've had so many different companies reach out to me in regards to a job, you know, telling them to contact them after I had to get my CDL. I had a company who actually I was set up to start my orientation with on Monday, but of course, I can't start Monday because I still have to go home to DMV and get everything straight with the DMV back home before, you know, so I can actually have my physical commercial driver's license in my hand. So, you know, even with the job searches, like, you have so many companies promising, you know, upwards of 60 to 80,000. Like, it's one company back home that I actually have a road test with on Tuesday, which I'm going to have to push back as well. You know, the recruiter quoted me 85 to 100,000 the first year. Mind you, a lot of that is going to be with working long days, long hours, lots of overtime, but I'm okay with that. My last job, I worked long days, long hours, and I was driving. Of course, you know, driving a straight truck is very different, in my opinion. Well, yeah, I think it's very different than driving, you know, a tractor with a trailer on the back. But, you know, that's something like with my training. The more you do something, the better you become at it. So I'm not scared. I'm actually excited. I'm not worried about none of that at this point. I feel like the hardest part is done now. But yeah, so as I said, like, you know, as far as like making a high income, at this point in my life, I need to make money. I need that money. I need to make some good money. And I feel like I've taken the step, and now I've gotten the I've gotten my ticket to make a high income. Now, is being a truck driver or being a driver, is this, you know, going to be the end all be all for me? No, I don't think that it is. I don't know how long I'm going to be a driver. I hope that I'm able to be a driver as long as I want to be. And I do plan to get some, you know, to get my life to get my life in order as I drive. I plan to use this opportunity to get the things that I want to accomplish, the goals that I want to accomplish. But, you know, if I decide somewhere down the line that it's no longer for me or that I want to, you know, back off from it to do something different, I got the freedom to do that, you know. This is something that I feel like, you know, I can jump back into at any time if I need to. You know, of course, some things might be different, but when that time comes, you know, I'll deal with that then. I've tried a lot of things. You know, I went into the military. That's something that I went into the Army back when I was 19 years old. Something that I never dreamed of doing. Something I never thought I would do. Something I didn't even want to do. But, you know, I went into the Army more so as a means to an end, for real. You know, I needed to do it when I did it. And I'm so glad that I did it, because that decision still creates opportunities for me today. You know, it still pays for itself. So that's something that I definitely don't regret. And I encourage anybody, you know, people talk mess about, you know, the military and, you know, being a black person going to the military and stuff like that. But you got to, with anything, with a job, with anything, you have to use it to your advantage. You know, you have to get out of it with what there is to get. You have to, you know, use it to your advantage. If you have a goal, use that for your advantage, because they're using you. They're going to use you. Your job is using you. So use it to your advantage. You know, whatever you got, use it to your advantage. But, you know, I tried a lot of things. After I got out of the military, I did work in banking. You know, I worked for Capital One right out the Army. Then I worked for a small bank that's not even around anymore, Virginia Commonwealth Bank. It's called something else now. Then I moved to Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is crazy, because as I'm saying Fayetteville, North Carolina, I'm coming up on the Fayetteville, North Carolina exit. But, yeah, I moved to Fayetteville, North Carolina for a little bit. I tried to work in banking there. I couldn't find, you know, a job that was for me at the time. I ended up applying for jobs everywhere. And then I ended up right back in Virginia at Capital One. And I felt like at that point in my life, that was the best decision that I had made also, because when I went back, I got promoted quickly. And I started making a lot of money at that time. And even now, it's still a lot of money. And I'm sure if I would have stayed, I would be making close to $30 an hour at this point, which for me is a lot, because I don't have any children. I don't have a lot of obligations, so that is a lot for me. So, yeah, if I had stayed, I'm pretty sure I would be way far ahead, but that's just not, and I plan to stay. Like, you know, I liked my position at the time when I was there before I moved to another position, but that's another story for another day. But while I'm touching on that, and this is something that I need to learn too, sometimes you do have to stick it out through the rough times, because the reason I left Capital One, it was more so of me being mad about something that once I left was done. Like, once I left, it was resolved, the situation with two people that I was mad at. Once I left that position, they ended up getting fired. So had I stayed, I would have been able to still enjoy my position. But that's not what was, you know, that's not what was written for me. I needed to move on. I needed to do my thing. So I did leave there. I went to CarMax briefly, you know, CarMax corporate office. I did something there, and one day I just decided that that's not what I wanted to do anymore. I wasn't happy, and I ended up in Atlanta. Atlanta was definitely an experience for me. Nothing bad at all. Nothing bad happened to me in Atlanta. Nothing bad happened for me in Atlanta. Atlanta was definitely an experience. I think that my experience in Atlanta had a lot to do with where I was, the mental space that I was in. I could probably still be in Atlanta had I realized some things ahead of. Had I realized some things before now, but that's another story for another podcast. But anyway, while I was in Atlanta, you know, I did work for a couple banks there, Bank of America. I worked for SunTrust before it became Truist, and I actually made good money at SunTrust. I had a nice position. I worked at Peachtree Center, which is in downtown. I felt fancy going to my job, like nice ass building. Driving into the city, you know, I felt fancy going to the, I liked the idea of that job, but I hated the job itself. I worked in fraud, and fraud is busy. Fraud is busy. I don't know, you know, what it looks like now, but fraud was busy, and I worked back office. It wasn't a phone position or anything like that. I did work back office. I did have to call customers to interview them, you know, about certain fraud claims that they had. A lot of these customers were lying. But at that type of fraud, it was check fraud, and, you know, it's just, it was never, the work was never done. The work was never done. You know, we had cases, and to even, you know, maintain your case low in that position, I had to work, I had to bring my work home. So I wasn't happy doing that. So while I was there, you know, I was in the military, so I had my, well, I wasn't in the military at the time, but being that I was in the military previously, I had my GI Bill. So I decided that I wanted to do it. Like I said, I don't like school, so I wanted to do something that was easy, well, something I thought was easy. So I signed up for cosmetology. I know y'all laughing, but it is what it is. It's my story. Shit, I'm not ashamed of it. I signed up for cosmetology school. I started with Aveda Institute in Atlanta, Peachtree Street, right there by the Amtrak station. You know, right before, right as you come out of Midtown going into Buckhead. So I started there January 2020, right before the pandemic hit. So I'm gonna be straight up with you. I didn't want to do no damn hair. I didn't, but I knew that I needed. I know I wanted to make a high income. So I needed to find something to do that I could make a high income and I could do it with my hands. I guess, you know, it didn't take a lot of thought to get the. Well, it does. It does take a lot of thought, especially, like, when it comes to color. Oh, my God. That's like, that's on its own. Aveda's color system is something else. Aveda's color system is, like, fucking, that's math. Like, yeah, Aveda's color system is, boy, when I tell you, I don't know it. I never learned this shit. But Aveda's color system is something else. So I wanted to do something to get to have a high income. And, you know, like, I'm seeing all these people online, you know, these influencers and stuff like that. They making wigs. So I'm like, well, shit, I could make some wigs. I could sew some hair in somebody's head. You know, I sat up there. I use YouTube to teach myself how to braid hair. But that's not what cosmetology school is. Cosmetology school don't teach you how to put no tracks in nobody's head. It don't teach you how to glue no wig down on nobody, or melt no wig down on nobody, however you do it. It don't teach you that shit. It's a lot of in-depth stuff. And no offense, but it teaches you to do white people hair. At least Aveda did, to be honest. It's not a cakewalk, I would say that. But also, like I said, I started right before the pandemic hit. So I think it was the beginning of March, like the first and second week of March, you know, the cases had gotten so bad, and everywhere was shutting down. So we ended up having to do school from home. Like, we had to, do hair school from home on a Zoom meeting. Now, I'm somebody who had never put my hands in nobody's hair. I never did nobody's hair. So now I'm at home, and I got to try to learn how to do hair, learn how to cut and shit. So it was cool for a month. It was cool for a month. But after that, I'm no longer interested in this shit. I'm doing everything else. I am at home cleaning up. I'm smoking hookah. I'm running to the stove. Like, because, you know, sometimes I turn my camera off because nobody's saying that. You know, I'm running to the store. I'm doing whatever the hell I want to do while I'm at home. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm laying on the couch, dozing off, if somebody call my name or text me. Like, I just wasn't learning anything. So that was in March or whatever. So we ended up going back on campus, and I couldn't wait to go back on campus because it's like, shit, I got to get out of this house. So we ended up going back on campus, I think it was mid-June or the beginning of July. It was somewhere around that time frame we ended up going back on campus or whatever. Matter of fact, it probably was like mid or end June because we were on campus before July 4th. So, and once I got back in school, it was like we got to sit there with a mask on all day, like a mask on for 10 hours, and learn how to do it. I was no longer into it. I just didn't want to do it anymore. So, you know, I did as much as I could until I was just over that shit. So by the time it came down to the part where I was supposed to do real people hair, I wasn't ready. Like, I wasn't ready, you know. But, you know, because I forgot how many sections the school is, but there's a section where you go from the classroom to you go downstairs and you start doing people's hair, like people who come to the school to get their hair done. So I wasn't ready. I felt ill-prepared, and I did two people's hair, and I think I fucked them up. I don't know. But we're going to say maybe I did, maybe I did. But anyway, nobody said anything out the week. I mean, because you come into a hair school to get your hair done. Like, you know, we train it. But I wasn't into it because I don't like not knowing what I'm doing. That's what my job, that's what anything. If I'm supposed to be the subject matter expert, I want to know what I'm doing. I don't like just going with the flow, especially when somebody else is considered. Like, I don't want to sit there and fuck up nobody's hair, even if you did come to a hair school to get your hair done. I still want you to leave out here, you know, feeling like you got your hair done. So, I couldn't do it. So, I didn't. I ended up taking a leave of absence from school. Then I got another job while I was on that leave of absence. And also, like I said, I was going through some things that I hadn't realized that I was going through. I think the whole time I was in Atlanta, I was really in a manic state. But again, that's another story for another day. We'll talk about depression and mental health on another day. But, you know, if I ended up getting another job, I got the job with a company called Loomis Armored. It's the armor truck company or whatever. They come pick up money from banks, ATMs, different businesses and stuff like that. So that job was cool. That was like one of the easiest jobs I ever had, but it wasn't paying no fucking money. You know, $13 an hour for me to count upwards of $1 million every night. But it was cool because even though I wasn't in school, I was still getting the money from school, which came back and bit me in my ass later. But it was cool because, like, I'm counting money. Like, I'm just counting bags of money all night, listening to music in my earphones. It's cool. The money ain't all that, but I still got this other income from school and stuff like that. So I won't trip it. So I did that until I had an emergency that I needed to go home for, and I was already, like, over that job, and I was already planning to move back to Virginia at the time. So I was looking for jobs elsewhere, so I had ended up taking a week off from that job, and I didn't go back. They actually fired me, because the day I was supposed to go back, I didn't go back. So the next morning, I went to log into the system, and it didn't tell me I was terminated, but I didn't give a fuck. So I ended up getting another job for a company called West Creek Financial, which now West Creek Financial is called Qualify. It's a very, 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 very subprime lending company. And it's like, if your car messes up and you take it to an auto shop, you can get credit through this company called Qualify. They'll fix your car. They'll pay the auto shop to fix your car, or, you need tires, or you go to a store like Ashley Furniture, and you can't qualify for, any other type of credit. You can go to Qualify and get credit and stuff like that. So, it's good for people who need it and people who understand the process, but a lot of people who went through Qualify, or at the time it was called West Creek, a lot of people who went through that, company to get financed, they didn't understand the process. They didn't understand that you have 90 days to pay it off with this flat rate, or you're gonna end up paying double. Actually, it was 2.5 times what you originally owed. A lot of people didn't understand that, and I worked in escalations. I was an escalation supervisor, so I was getting cussed out all day. Mind you, I was not in the best space mentally. But I was, still trying to, just stay afloat, just still trying to live. So I did that job from, the end of November until May of 2021 because I just couldn't take it no more. Like, I was at home, and I didn't even lie to you. I was at home smoking weed while I was supposed to be working. Like, I was not feeling that shit. I'm getting cussed out all day about stuff that's not my fault. We have vendors who... it is up to the customer to read a contract, but most of the time people don't read contracts, and that's not our fault, and it's not the vendor's fault if they don't read contracts. But I feel like a decent person should explain to someone, look, this is what you're getting yourself into. You are borrowing this amount, and you have until this day to pay this amount off. If you don't pay this amount off by this day, you're going to end up owing this amount, and it's going to stretch until it's going to stretch out a whole year. Your payments are going to be biweekly or weekly, depending on how you get paid. So people on the front end weren't doing their job. So these customers will call in irate, and when they called in irate to us, the people on the front line who got the call, if these customers said anything that was considered a trigger, like if they cussed at them, if they said they were going to sue, they would automatically drop these calls into my queue, in which, I have a queue as to where I take calls, but also I have cases that I'm working too, because I'm working on other escalated things. I'm trying to authorize payment arrangements or settlements, stuff like that. It was other stuff that I was doing behind the scenes, but also still taking these escalated calls. And I just felt like a lot of these calls were just being dropped unnecessarily. I felt like management didn't care. So I just didn't want to do that job any longer. And I quit. And I found myself quitting a lot of things during that time frame. But I quit, and I did Uber. I did Uber and Lyft. You can make decent money in Atlanta doing Uber and Lyft and other gig work in Atlanta. You can make decent money, but it's just nonstop. And if you're not disciplined enough to, and I wasn't, if you're not disciplined enough to do it, to get on a schedule with it, and to make yourself do it even when you don't feel like it, which is probably like what an entrepreneur does, they have to make themselves do things that they don't feel like doing, you're not going to make enough money. You're going to end up chasing your tail. And that's what I did. I ended up chasing my tail. I ran up a lot of credit. I let some stuff get behind. It just got to a point where I was just like, why am I fighting to stay in a place? And then, too, it got to a point where I wasn't even going anywhere. I was in my house. Like I said, I was smoking weed real bad around that time. Like, all I wanted to do was smoke, give me something good to eat, and lay back and watch a movie. I didn't want to do shit else. Like, y'all people who are productive, when y'all smoke weed, more power to you. I ain't never been one of them people. When I smoke, I want to go home. If I'm out, I'm going home. If I'm at home, I'm going to bed. I wasn't productive when I smoked, and that's all I wanted to do at one point was smoke and eat. And I gained a lot of weight, and I, like I said, I wasn't doing much of anything else. But it was just the point where I'm just like, why am I still here in Atlanta? Like, I'm not doing anything. I'm just here. I wasn't going out to the clubs. I wasn't dating. I was barely even talking to my friends. Like, when I left Atlanta, I wasn't even talking to my friends there. Like, I left quietly. A lot of people didn't even know that I was leaving when I did leave. My best friend, he didn't know. Like, he didn't know that I had left Atlanta until I was gone. And, you know, I was a horrible friend for that. But it's where I was in that process. And I want to say a whole lot more, so I guess I'm going to have to make this two-part podcast or whatever. That's just where I was. So I ended up coming back home, ended up moving in with my mom, and, my mama is cool. I love my mama to death. But it's just kind of like my mom I know she understands, but it's just that whole mom thing that she just, I'm the mama. Like, I'm 33 years old, mom. I don't need you asking me where I'm at, where I'm going, what's this, what's that. Like, I'm grown, and it's not like I'm living at home for free, you know. I ain't just here not paying bills and stuff. So, you know, that's another thing that I had to, get a grip with too, like just being back at home. It hurt my pride being home. And it's not necessarily that I had to be there, because I still could have stayed and struggled, but it made more sense to stop fucking struggling to pay bills when you can go home and pay way less than what you were paying and get yourself together. So that's a word for anybody. If you lose your way, you can always go home. I heard that from somebody. Funky Dineva, he said that. If you ever lose your way, you can always go back home. So when I went back home, I went through a depression too. Like even now, like, I have friends who feel like I don't fuck with them, you know, it's not like that. It's just that when I'm going through something, I'm going through it on my own. I'm not putting it on nobody else. I'm not running to nobody to talk, to cry. It's just, I'm dealing with it as best as I can. So I had gained a lot of weight. You know, I was depressed. You know, I was just in a weird space. And I had been for a while. And, you know, I had to work through that on my own. And one day my mama cussed me out. because I had a bad, I was mad one day. And I just kind of like, just went off, and she went the fuck back off too. And she told me some things that I needed to hear, and I did need to hear, even though at the time I didn't want to hear. But she did tell me some things that just made me say, okay, get your shit together. Like, I needed to get my shit together. So I did what I needed to do the work. If you go back to my first episode, which was my solo cruise, that's when things started taking a turn. That's when I started to get better, to feel better. And again, I'll address that in another episode. Maybe I'll do two parts and address that later too, about mental health. But that made me start to get my shit together. So I got a job, because at that point I was like, I don't want to work. I ain't want to work because it was like, where am I gonna work at? I don't want to do customer service, and that's what my experience is. You know, I've never done manual labor as far as, like, you know, to work in a warehouse, because, you know, either you're doing customer service and you're getting your brains beat down all day, or you're doing manual labor and your body getting broke down all day to make decent money, and, you know. So I just knew that I didn't want to go to customer service again. I'm at this point, customer service is trash. People are trash. Like, people are so rude and so mean to each other these days, and I don't understand why. I don't. But I knew that that's not what I wanted to do. I did not want to do any type of direct customer-facing job. So anyways, I applied for Carvana just to see what it was. And I didn't even think that I was going to take that job or stay at that job. But I applied for it, and I liked it. Like, I drove the little, if you look at the commercial, you see them pulling up to the truck with the, pulling up to your house in the little truck with the car in the back. I drove one of them for Carvana, and I enjoyed it. The team, it was a lot of younger people. It's cool to be around young people, but at my age, and I ain't saying I'm old, but I'm a little too old for some shit. So at my age, dealing with these early 20-somethings, it kind of worked my nerves a little bit about some things because nobody cared about anything and nobody cared about shit. So when nobody cares about the job, it makes the job really hard on everybody else. And then, too, management. What the fuck? Y'all, this man is standing. This man is standing on the side of 95. Like, he's standing on the side by the fast lane, the left lane. That just scared the shit out of me. He's looking like he's looking for something. I don't know what the hell he's looking for. But anyways, back to what I was saying. So, yeah, in management at Carvana, they weren't good for shit either. I don't want to bad talk nobody, but I just felt like a lot of people didn't care. It was just more so, I'm just here for my paycheck, which is cool. I mean, that's like with any job, I'm just here for my paycheck. But at the same time, if we're a team, we all gotta, care somewhat to make it easier on everybody else. To make it easier on each other, we have to care. And then, you had management who didn't care. And I'm a firm believer of you lead from the front. So if you fucked up, your team is gonna be fucked up. I learned that in the military. You lead from the front. If your first sergeant is the shitbag, the company gonna be a shitbag. Now the command is a different thing. I feel like NCOs is what keeps the Army. And I'm saying the Army because I don't know about the other branches, but I do feel like NCOs is what keeps the Army moving. Those captains and colonels, all them, the officers, they're there. But I feel like it's NCOs and the soldiers is what keeps everything moving like it should be. So with that said, if your first sergeant or your sergeant major or whatever, if they ain't no good, then the rest of the company or the battalion, it ain't going to be too good either. Anyways, I enjoyed my job with Carvana. I enjoyed driving, just being, and like I said, I did Uber, and I ain't got no problem with doing Uber. The only thing about doing Uber, it was just too much wear and tear on my car. It did get dangerous in Atlanta doing Uber and Lyft. Some people I just would prefer not to have in my car. But driving around all day, that's cool with me. Shit, I'm listening to my music. I'm having a good time. And with Carvana, like, I didn't really deal with bad, I didn't have bad customer experiences. And that's another thing I feel like with that job. It's like, let's talk about it now. Customer experience is major. Like, I guess, and it's just in me from coming from customer service and working in banking, like, customer experience counts a lot because it rolls down. Shit rolls downhill. So if a customer has been pushed, like, they like, with Carvana, you buy your vehicle online. Everything is done online. So you buy your vehicle way before you see it. You could be in Virginia, and you buy a vehicle that's still in California. And they may tell you that this car is going to get there in 2 weeks. It's going to get to Virginia in 2 weeks. So you have a day when you're supposed to get your car. Now, as far as, like, whether or not that car is going to be transported within that time frame and be ready for you, a lot of times it wasn't. A lot of times we were pushing customers back because either the car didn't arrive on time, or in the state of Virginia, before a car is sold, it has to go through a state inspection. So we send these cars through a state inspection, and at state inspection, they find something wrong with it. So here it is, the day of or the day before your car is supposed to be delivered to you, and we're telling you your car needs this part, and it's not going to be here until next week at such and such date, so we have to reschedule you. And we have to, and then as far as, yeah, the police reported ahead, let me slow down. And then as far as rescheduling you, we reschedule you to when we can fit you in. So even if your car is going to be ready on Thursday, if we can't fit you in Thursday, you might not get your car till Sunday. So that customer experience, it was just, it made a lot of difference. The customers want priority, and I do feel like when you in a service industry, your customers are supposed to be priority. And also, if somebody's buying, spending upwards $20,000 to $30,000 on a car, then you need to cater to them. Like, cars ain't cheap. Cars are not cheap. If you've looked at a car within the last year, you know the cars these days aren't cheap. You have Acuras 2012 and 13 that are still going in the high teens. Cars aren't cheap these days. So a lot of people didn't care about, you know, the customer. And I feel like when you don't care about the customer, your customer service is horrible. It does make the job even more difficult. But luckily, I didn't have bad experience with customers. You know, how mad can you get? I'm dropping your new car off, you know. But, you know, every now and then you did have someone who, you know, they pissed off, they don't want to talk to you, they just rude, just get my damn car off the truck and get out my driveway. But I didn't mind it. I liked it. It was just that with Carvana, I wasn't making enough money. And the money that I was making with Carvana, I've been there. I've done that. I did that. Like, I've made this money before. And I've made way more than this before. So I couldn't be satisfied with that. But I knew that I didn't want to go back into the field that I had came out of. So I had to find something that I like, and I like driving, and I have a couple friends who drive trucks, and, you know, they've told me about their experiences and how they like it. You know, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and, you know, just got different, you know, got feedback from different people and, you know, what their experiences are and how they like it. And, you know, I feel like this is something I can do. This is something that I could do. And yeah, so this is where I am with trucking. This is how I got into it. You know, where I am right now is, I don't know what's next. But definitely I got to find a job at this point, which I am absolutely confident that I will have a job within the next week or two. So I just got to find a job that fits me and what I'm looking to do. As far as, you know, what I want to do right now with trucking, I just want to get in, get my experience. I want to make some good money, for sure. But I know that I have a lot of learning that I need to do, a lot that I don't know of yet. But we're going to get there. Well, I'm going to get there. But, yeah, I don't want to be a lease operator. I don't want to be an owner operator. No time soon, if ever. I definitely know that because I don't feel like right now leasing or owning a truck would be in my best interest because I ain't got no money. But also, right now with gas prices and truck prices, well, fuel prices, because you don't put gas in a truck, you put diesel. So fuel prices and the cost of owning a truck, you know, right now it's expensive. And I don't want to get into something that I'm constantly having to be on the road. Like, I want to be on the road, I want to make some good money, but I don't want to have to be on the road all the time. Like, I don't want this shit to get old to me, and I don't want to burn out so fast. I don't want to have to constantly be on the road to make a truck payment or whatever not. But yeah, that's where I am with trucking. Again, it's not the end all be all, but I'm gonna enjoy it for right now, and. I did do this podcast from my car as I'm driving down the road, so hopefully there ain't too much road noise. Hopefully I don't sound muffled. Hopefully, you know, everything is good. But I am coming up on 50 minutes, so I'm going to get out of here. I hope you guys stayed until the end, and if you did, thank you so much. Send up some prayers for me as I'm out here on these highways and byways. you know. thank you for listening.
All right, so there's a point in this episode when I'm talking about the scholarship from Indeed, the Troops into Transportation Scholarship. In the episode, I mentioned that they select 5 applicants per year, and I spoke incorrectly. It's actually 500 applicants for their scholarship. 500 applicants are selected for their scholarship each year. So if you know a vet, or someone transitioning out of the military, and you think that this program might be good for them, please direct them to the Troops into Transportation Scholarship from Indeed. And again, they select 500 recipients per year.